Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and you can see some video clips from our show at WNYC.org. And right now we have a very, very funny census video up there. That's all I will say about it, except that it's Christopher Walken doing everything that he possibly can to obfuscate when the census taker comes around and asks him some innocent questions. It's very funny, and it's on our page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And we've been collecting your predictions on our website today for what the New York area will be like in 2050 to inform the conversation that we will have now with Joel Kotkin, author of a new book, The Next 100 Million, America in 2050. He sees 100 million more Americans by then, mostly immigrants and their children, and sees that as a very good thing, but also sees the New York area in deep decline in many ways, and certainly different than it is today. He is a fellow in urban futures at Chapman College in Southern California, but he's here in New York today. Joel, welcome back to WNYC.
Nice to be here.
And listeners, now we'll take him on the phone. Give us your predictions for what the New York area will be like in 2050 to inform this conversation with Joel Kotkin, author of The Next 100 Million, America in 2050. And we have 300 million Americans today, roughly. So by 2050, not that far away, we'll have another 100 million people?
Yeah, I mean, the population growth actually is slower than it was in some of the previous decades. But basically, you just have the momentum of all the people who are here, the people who have emigrated here. And so it's inevitable that you're going to have this population. You know, demographers vary. Some think 390, some go to 500. I pick 400 million just because I think it's a fairly safe number.
And some of our listeners may be thinking right now, where are we going to put all those people? But you see this in overwhelmingly positive terms, right?
Well, I think it's sort of inevitably where we are as a country. So you have to figure out how you deal with things. I mean, this is a very big country. I mean, being in Manhattan, you would think we're running out of land, but it is actually quite a large country, and there's a lot of space and a lot of places for people to live. So I think that it's not necessarily going to be, you know, everybody's going to be living cheek to jowl with each other. I do think we're going to have to be intelligent about how we plan. We're going to have to be intelligent about how we live. That's going to be a challenge. And most importantly, unlike, let's say, countries like Japan or the European countries that are going to have declining and much more rapidly aging populations, we're going to really have to think about how we create jobs. We need 125,000 new jobs a month right now to just stay even. And obviously, we're not doing that.
But am I wrong that you see a very positive future? You think all this immigration is good, this growth is good for America compared to, say, some of the Western European countries and Japan, where they're not having many kids and so the population is aging and they don't have the immigration rates that we do?
Well, I think it's inevitable that if you're a country, let's take 2050, you're in Japan, you're in Germany, you're talking about 35-40% of the population being over 65. The United States will be about 20% of the population. That's an extreme strain on a country when you have so many elderly people and so few people going into the workforce. The workforce in Japan is projected to shrink by 44% by 2050. Very difficult to see how you sustain that over time. So in a developing country, it's a good thing that you have reduced birth rates. But in a developed country, you could have too much of a good thing and too much decline in population. And I think that's going to create some severe problems.
Who will the next 100 million be demographically?
Well, demographically, of course, you can't predict it. I'll tell you the group I think is going to grow the fastest is a mixed-race population. You know, I live in Los Angeles. You walk around New York. The number of kids who are with kids of a different race is pretty high. UC Irvine predicts by 2050, one out of every five Americans will be, like President Obama, a product of at least some degree of a mixed race background. So I think that population, obviously the Hispanic population, the Asian population will grow. The African American population will grow some as well. But American 2050, you're probably looking at somewhere around 40 to 50% of the population being non-white.
How much do you see so many immigrants assimilating into traditional notions of American lifestyles and American values?
Well, I think you have to look at it almost in a different way. You have to say, well, yes, they will be integrating and assimilating, and they'll be assimilating us at the same time. So we change.
As has always happened.
As has always happened. I mean, you think of today as opposed to 40 or 50 years ago. As I tell my girls, I have two daughters, when I first went to Washington, D.C. in 1960, they had colored-only hotels. And they would say, no way. But we've gone a very, very long way in this country. And I think that there's going to be a lot of challenges, but I think we're looking at probably the most diverse society, large society in the history of the world.
And did you look at the economy of 2050 in this book? Because with the crisis today in America, are you looking at economic change brought about by both globalization and immigration?
Oh, certainly. And I think this is why I think our economic policy has to be focused on growth. We have to be putting much more into infrastructure. We have to be focused a lot more on our productive economies, manufacturing, agriculture, energy production. I think those are going to become more important, not less. And I think we really have to start thinking about how we begin to generate enough wealth in this country through a shift, I think, to production and away from consumption. I think these are all necessary parts of this change. A large labor force and labor force growth should help you do that if you have the right policies.
How do we get to production? I realize you're more of a demographer than an economist. But are you looking at the outflow of manufacturing jobs and our consuming habits and saying, how do we become a producing economy as much as a consuming economy again?
Well, I think, first of all, there's a lot of investments in infrastructure that are necessary. There are a lot of education investments. I personally believe we send too many people to four-year colleges, and we don't teach people skills that are really useful in the economy. That would certainly help agriculture, mining, manufacturing. I think we have to have on trade, we have to be a little bit careful about some of the things that we're allowing. For instance, China has is trading with a currency 40% undervalued. You can't keep doing that forever. I think we give much too much of the system is tilted towards financial as opposed to production. I think we need to make some very strong changes in our tax code and in our and the way we regulate our economy. We cannot make it to 2050 with 400 million people without a strong economic growth component, or else you're really looking at a real decline in the standard of living.
You have a section of your book called The Hybrid Culture, about today's young people born after 1982, so anybody under 30, basically, driving a trend toward what you call hybridization. What does the word mean in that context?
Well, hybridization is something where you go to, for instance, you go to a restaurant and there is now elements of Mexican cuisine and elements of Japanese cuisine. I was in Houston recently and there was a Colombian sushi place.
I went to a French-Brazilian place the other night here in Manhattan.
Right, and so you see that. You see that in clothes, how people dress, what type of clothes they wear. Language, the beauty of the English language has been, unlike French, which has tried to always regulate things, we adopt Spanish words, Chinese words, Japanese words. So the English that's spoken in 2050 will be quite a bit different than the English we speak today. When my girls want they want to have a steak, they think of carne asada. And of course, it will depend on different parts of the country. And certainly in the southwestern United States, certainly Spanish will be a big influence. I think the influence of things like yoga and Eastern mysticism, I think, will be very strong, particularly in areas like the Pacific Northwest. So I think it's really sort of the bringing in of new elements into the culture. And that's what makes America the vital place it is.
As a futurist, how do you see the place of Spanish in America in 2050? So many people who are skeptical of immigration are so afraid of it.
Well, all the statistics will tell you the vast majority of the second generation are predominantly English speakers. And by the third generation, most of the kids don't even speak Spanish. So I think Spanish will be an important language. It certainly will be the second most important language of the country, mainly by new immigrants. But when I've every once in a while, some nativists will come to me and say, well, you know, their kids aren't learning English. Well, I don't think that's true. I mean, there's no statistical basis for that. Now, you can say, well, they're not speaking English well. And I said, well, are your kids speaking English well either? I mean, the quality of English itself may be declining, but the fact of the matter is Spanish language separatism is not the future.
So we have looked mostly so far at the national theories in Joel Kotkin's The Next 100 Million, America in 2050. In a minute, we will apply it to the New York area, which figures prominently in this book, and we will compare Joel Kotkin's predictions about New York in 2050 to yours. So we'll read some of what's been coming in on our Facebook page and on our comments page, and you can call us right now with your predictions for what New York will be like in 2050. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, as we continue with Joel Kotkin, author of The Next 100 Million, America in 2050, in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and my guest is Joel Kotkin, who is a fellow in urban futures. How's that for a job? You're an urban futurist.
Right.
At Chapman College in Orange County, California. He's here in New York today to talk about his new book, The Next 100 Million, and that refers to the next 100 million people, because that's how many more he thinks we'll have. By the year 2050, there are 300 million Americans today, approximately. He expects about 400 million by 2050. So the book is called The Next 100 Million, America in 2050. And now we'll talk about some of the predictions that are specifically pertinent to the New York area. And we've been asking you for yours all morning. So let's see, someone on our Facebook page, Lower Manhattan will probably be underwater. But as it always has, the resilient spirit of the city will carry on, and New York will not be too far from what it is today, a testament to the rest of the world about the possibilities and strength of diversity. Dan on Facebook writes, more rooftop gardens and solar panels. However, John from Manhattan writes, 9 million people plus 500,000 tourists at any given moment, no way to get around massively reduced subway and bus services. Manufacturing and industrial sectors even smaller than now. Minimum wage doubles from now. Advertisements everywhere, perhaps even inside the lobby of your building. Jim from Long Island City, private cars banned from Manhattan with exceptions for special needs, replaced by streetcars and quiet elevated trains. And Ingrid on Facebook writes, 2050, still no Second Avenue subway. So... So where do you start? I mean, you see a suburban future for the United States, and I think you write off New York somewhat as what you call a luxury city.
Well, what I talk about in the book is, one, I think the vast majority of the population will continue to live in suburbs. Suburbs themselves will change. They will, as the suburbs of New York have changed as well, they're becoming more diverse. They have more things to offer culturally. They have, you know, many more good restaurants. Of course, the ethnics moving out there sort of helps. I mean, for instance, my brother lives in Westchester County, northern Westchester, and he says there is more and more to do in northern Westchester compared to when he moved there 20, 25 years ago. New York, I think, is really got to be thought of in two ways. One, there is going to be Manhattan will be the luxury city, as Mayor Bloomberg's talked about, simply too desirable, too expensive, very difficult for middle-class families to live in. I mean, I just think that's going to be the nature of this. I think the luxury city plays a role. I mean, for young people, it's a great place to spend a certain period of your life. But if you don't have a trust fund, you're going to most likely not be able to stay. This is what all the statistics and the analysis I did with the Center for an Urban Future did. And I think that's pretty much what you have. The real hope and the future of New York, what will make New York a great city into the mid-21st century, is what's happening in the outer boroughs. And those are areas that are a little lower density. They're not suburbs, although some of it's quite suburban. And if you can maintain the quality of life and diversify the New York economy so that not everybody has to go into Manhattan, I think New York would have a great future.
Do you go beyond the outer boroughs to regionally? Because really what we have is a 15 to 20 million people
right.
New York metropolitan area.
Well, and I think what you're finding is, I did some analysis on this, most of the jobs in New York aren't in Manhattan. Now, Manhattan has more job concentration than any metropolitan area in the country. It's about 20% of the people in greater New York work in the central business district of New York. Most American cities are, it's about 6, 7, 8, 9%. New York is, that's one thing about New York. It's a unique place. And I think it will have a unique place in America in 2050. We will never see, maybe anywhere in the world, anything quite like Manhattan. It's a product of the era of trains, the era of great shipping. I remember in a previous book, a Dutchman came here and said, Manhattan is a plank set out in the middle of the sea, as a just ideal location. It won't be replicated, but it will still be a great place and a unique place, and for more and more people.
Hamed in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hamed, thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you. That's a great show. And actually, I agree with the vision of Professor Joe. I agree with everything he said.
America in 2050, Hamed, according to you? I mean, New York in 2050.
Yes, 2050. I share my view also. America is going to be the center of the cultural connection world. And as long as Japan for Japanese and China for Chinese, and this is a very authentic and culture, but America going to be in 2050 going to be the center of the culture connections, and those communities.
Japan for the Japanese, China for the Chinese, America for everybody.
For everybody.
That beautifully put.
And also in the future, those communities here, very diverse, are going to be. They have a very great loyalty to America, and wherever happened to the country, they're going to lift it up. Direction.
Hamed, I'm going to leave it there, but very uplifting call.
Well, I think he's really onto something, which is it doesn't appear Europe is having a lot of problems with integration of immigrants. China, Japan, Korea, they're not going to take large numbers of immigrants. And I do think America will be, I wrote an article, it's on both newgeography.com and in Forbes.com, which is America as the multiracial superpower. And I think it will be in a global city, if you will. It will be the cosmopolitan core of the global culture, because no other society will have large communities of people from around the world. And I think this will be an enormous advantage. And, of course, New York would be one of the prime centers for that.
Luis in Manhattan, New York in 2050. Luis, you're on the air. All right, let's try Ken in Manhattan. Ken, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. My comment was that the tone of this show people seem pretty resigned and complacent to the idea of population growth. I mean, to me, if you look around the world, you see the cities with the biggest population densities have the lowest quality of life. And, you know, adding 100 million people to the United States, and I don't know how many more to New York, in my mind, doesn't seem like it's going to be a overall positive thing. I mean, there's infrastructure already with roads and water, food issues. I just don't see why there's so much complacency looking at those population growth.
Joel Kotkin.
Okay, I mean, first of all, this is what's going to happen, so we might as well figure out how we prepare for it intelligently and take advantage of what positives. As I say in the book, you know, we're going to have to build our communities differently. One of the big things I believe is we're going to go back to more people working at home, which will obviously reduce a lot of the stress on the transportation system and on energy. But I don't see there's any way of going back. And here's the question. What is happening in the world between now and 2050 is that the world population growth rates are going to continue to drop. By 2050, we may be at a point where the world will reach its maximum population. The danger then for societies is your population too old? Are there too many people who need to be supported as opposed to people who can create wealth?
And it's so different country to country. We're in so many very poor countries in the developing world. You have very young populations, a lot of kids in poverty, and that's an explosive mixture. But in a lot of the developed world, as we talked about before, has these aging populations without replacement rates of births coming along, and they have other problems. Look what's happening in Greece right now with an aging population, and they have really hit a debt crisis like we can only imagine in this country. Unfortunately, we can't imagine it. But what about New York in particular with the population growth? Because it is hard for New Yorkers to imagine this region becoming any more dense than it already is. If we're going to get 100 million more Americans, and we already have about 8 million in New York City, I guess 15, maybe even 20 million in the region as a whole, what are we going to have in 2050?
Well, I would imagine that New York will probably not grow as quickly as a lot of parts of the country, but there will be more people. I think that you'll probably see most of the densification that will take place more in the suburbs. I think there will be new communities that will be on the outer edges of New York, which will be, let's say, an hour from New York, and they will be not traditional suburbs, not bedroom communities. They will be places where people live and work, or they work close by. That's already what's happening. There's no question that there are great challenges to this, but you can't reverse it. And the other question is, do we want to look like Japan? I mean, Japan is already hitting that point where it really cannot grow its economy. And there are a lot of things about a society without children, which, at least to me, and I'm a father, so I'm prejudiced in this area. I think a world without children, not having that aspect of society, you know, you walk in cities in Japan and in Germany, and you see almost no children. I think it's depressing.
Joel Kotkin, author of The Next 100 Million, America in 2050. What do you think New York's going to look like in 2050? Matthew in Brooklyn. Matthew, New York in 2050?
Yes. Good morning, Brian. In 2050, I think New York, most part of New York will be underwater because this prophet in the 19th and 20th century, she had predicted in her book, one of her books, she is the most widely translated American author.
What's the prediction?
More than 10,000 pages. And then she says in the book, Last Day Event, in chapter 8, she gave the name of the city that will be destroyed.
This is
New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco.
This is a religious
California.
Prediction, right, Matthew?
Excuse me?
This is the religious apocalypse?
She's a Christian author, but everything that she has said, they are fulfilling right before our eyes.
Matthew, we thank you, and we go to Carlos in Queens. Carlos, New York in 2050?
Oh, I think it's going to be very much like Latin America, like most Latin American cities. I think it's going to be mostly mestizo, which, as you know, is mixed race. I think it's also going to be a greater divide between the rich and the poor. You're going to see like a smaller percentage of rich, more poor, probably moving out to the outer boroughs, as you guys called it. You know, I'm one of them. You know, moved to from Manhattan to Queens, more affordable. And I think that you know, it's going to be a lot of more urban sprawl. I don't see how you know, there's a correlation between Japan and New York City either, because I mean, you know, we have a lot more landmass, a lot of more natural resources than they do. So I don't see that. I don't know if you could answer that for me.
First of all, yeah, I think we are in a very different situation than Japan. One of the great industries of the next 20, 30 years is going to be agriculture. You'll have 3 billion more people by 2050, and the United States, along with Australia and Argentina, Brazil, a few other countries, is going to meet most of that demand. And I really appreciate your bringing up the issue of class. In the book, I make the point that the great issue of the 21st century in America will be that of upward mobility and class, that although race will be an issue, the real issue is going to be distribution of income, upward mobility. And I think we even see that in our contemporary politics, where President Obama, you know, sort of went off on health care and climate change and other issues. And the issue that really resonates is that of upward mobility. And that will be more intensified in New York because New York has a very high cost of living and its economy has evolved in a way that is not that conducive to middle class jobs. And so I think that you're completely right that that issue will be critical. I hope we don't end up like Latin American cities, but it is a possibility.
Emil from Brooklyn writes in, I hope the city resembles the New York of Futurama, with people traveling around the city via pneumatic tubes. I would miss the pigeons, though.
Well, you know what? I think New York could be a much nicer city in the future, and I'll tell you a couple of things. One, in the work I've done with the Center for Urban Future here in New York, you could diversify the economy. The outer borough economies could become more self-sufficient, have more employment, so there's less long-term commuting. Obviously, you could plant many more trees. You could reclaim some areas for parks. There are many ways you could make New York a much more pleasant place to live. And I'm basically pretty convinced that if New York does that, that New York will continue to be an attractive place for people from all over the world.
We're just about out of time with Joel Kotkin, author of The Next 100 Million, America in 2050. On the liberal conservative spectrum, you're usually affiliated a bit on the conservative end. You're not hardly Glenn Beck, as people can hear, but you have ties at the Manhattan Institute. For example, you are doing an event with them tonight here in New York that we want to mention, Around the Book, 6 o'clock at the Harvard Club, 35 West 44th Street. But who are you getting it from more for your theories? Liberals who don't like your sort of anti-urbanism, you're against the Richard Florida density paradigm of the cities of the future, or conservatives who think that you're too sanguine about large-scale Latino immigration, and we have 20 seconds.
I get it from both sides. It's and I don't know which one dislikes me more, but what I'm hoping is that most people who look at the book will see that it's very, very fair-minded, and I don't come into it with a political prescription going from the right or from the left. I think we have too much of that in this country right now. What we need is a discussion about the future and where we want to go.
Joel Kotkin, author of The Next 100 Million, America in 2050. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And again, at the Harvard Club at 6 o'clock if you're interested in his event tonight. Our last word for today is happy birthday. Happy birthday, Oscar Brand. And we invite you to join the WNYC family in toasting Oscar Brand on this, his 90th birthday. You can send birthday wishes to Oscar by posting a comment on the WNYC homepage at WNYC.org and listen to his Folk Song Festival Saturday night at 10 on AM 820 WNYC right after Danny Stiles Music Museum for the Oscar Brand 90th birthday show. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.